And Hide Me Out of Sight by I Bear. Read by Night Tracer. Fandom Hockey RPF, Pittsburgh Penguins, pairing Sid Gino. Summary. Tam Lin, if there was hockey, Sad Gino, and Sidney Crosby. Oh, I forbid you, maidens all, that wear gold in your hair. When Sid walks into the locker room for the 2005 season, there's obvious excitement in the air. Everyone is happy to be playing again, but there is a different kind of energy in the air. Anxiety and expectations seem to follow Sid around everywhere. And as he pushes himself hard and harder, they build up and up into a noxious cloud that threatens to suffocate him. The cloud dissipates a little after his first game and disappears altogether with his first NHL goal. Sid lets out a roar of triumph and then a sigh of relief. They don't win that game. They don't win 9 straight games to open up the season. And even though Sid is getting more and more comfortable in his new uniform, he knows the locker room buzz has died down. Mario looks tired and worried. We were supposed to get someone else this year, he tells Sid after they lose to the Panthers in OT. You two would have been unstoppable together. There was supposed to be someone else shouldering those expectations with you, Sid hears. He thinks that would have been nice. And then they win against the Thrashers, and Sid stops thinking about what would have been nice, puts his head down, and plays. To Come or Go by Carter Ho. The young Tam Lin is there. It's his first clean-up day. Mario drives him in and walks him through the process. They both say goodbye to the guys and Sid dawdles a bit, taking in the full feeling of defeat that comes with packing away his gloves and sticks and skates so early on in the year. Never again, he thinks. Promises. Mario nudges him on the shoulder. I'm going to go up, talk to Eddie for a bit. He looks concerned. Something wrong? Sidney asks, shoving his flip-flops into a duffel bag. We're going over some Malkin tapes. The Penguins haven't given up on him. We want to sign him if he's ready to come over, Mario explains. There's something else. What are you really worried about? Mario runs his hand through his hair, sighing. Well, there's a lot to worry about. Craig is dealing with Russia and Metallurg, and Eddie and I think... He trails off, furrowing his eyebrows. I don't know. We think there's something wrong with Malkin. Like an injury? That would be the worst thing Sid could imagine. To have a career-threatening injury before even really getting to play in the show. No, more like... He doesn't seem all there when he plays. Mario tries to explain. He's always been pretty good at passionate hockey, but this past year, his numbers haven't suffered, and that's what we really care about, but... Mario stops himself. He shrugs, unsettled but obviously uncertain. Sid nods as if he understands, and tilts his head in the direction of the door, so that Mario knows he can go. He does, smiling ruefully at his babble, and Sid goes back to cleaning up. He's completely done when his eyes fall on his pair of skates. Still sharpened, he thinks. They were waiting for a postseason that would never have come. He laces them on, grabs his duffel, and heads for the ice. It's easy to forget his failures when he's skating, but Sid tries not to indulge himself too often. It's good to remember his weaknesses, to think over his faults, so that he can get better. Today has already been full of enough disappointment, though. So Sid just takes off and cuts snow across the ice that won't be here tomorrow. He's picking up speed, crossing his feet, accelerating into the refreshing cold air. When his skate hits something, Sid trips and falls, flopping on his belly and getting ice all over the front of his pen shirt. He pulls himself up with a grimace. Mario is not going to want him getting dirty, melted ice all over the inside of his car. Sid is back on his feet and about to skate back to the bench, before he thinks to look for whatever tripped him. He looks around and, much closer than he thought it'd be, he sees a chain with a cross on it. It looks unfamiliar, but Sid spends some time trying to figure out who on the roster would wear a necklace like this. Its thick, heavy chain weighs his hand down as he frowns and thinks, and then decides it might be the Zamboni drivers. He's planning on swinging by the lobby, dropping it into Lost and Found, but then Mario calls, "Sid, what are you doing out there? We have to go or else Natalie will chew us both out for being late for lunch." And Sid starts. He drops the chain over his head to settle next to his 87 charm. "It's hard to let go, isn't it?" Mario asks as they're walking out. He keeps turning back to look at Melon, a trembling frown on his face. "But at least you had it for a while," Sid reassures him. Mario turns white eyes on him, surprised, but pleasantly so. He smiles. "That's true," Mario agrees. He doesn't turn around to look at Melon again. Sid does. He's not sure where those words had come from. When she came to Carter Ho, Tam Lin was at the well. Yevgeny Malkin goes missing one day, pops up in LA another, and then he's on Mario's doorstep. He's tired and overwhelmed, and his wide eyes must barely be taking anything in, what with how glassy and distant they seem. Sid remembers what Mario had said about him, the way his spirit didn't seem to be all there behind his eyes. And he agrees. There's something else there too. It might be anxiety, before signing with his NHL team. More likely it's fear, because he just broke his contract and basically fled to America to play hockey with them. He watches the way Malkin chews on his bottom lip and hugs himself tightly with both arms and thinks, maybe it's something else. Maybe it's something scarier. He doesn't say anything, though. Just stands in the background as Mario greets Malkin through a translator. Gaunt is standing beside him, telegraphing his worry through a stoic frown. He's the second one to welcome Malkin, in Russian this time. And Sid notes the way Malkin relaxes just a little at the sound of Gaunt's voice. He's still tense, but he's not holding onto himself quite so tightly. His eyes seem more alert, as if he's suddenly been woken up. "Oh, and this is Sydney," he hears Mario saying. Sid is already stepping up, one hand outstretched, when Malkin turns to look at him and his eyes widen and his jaw drops. He looks so surprised that Sid freezes, and Sid notices the way Malkin's mouth tilts up on one side, and he can hear the huff of almost relieved laughter before all of that is lost in the sensation of huge limbs piled on top of him, hands pulling on his back. Sid is being hugged by Yevgeny Malkin, and he has no idea why. Gonch and Mario must be equally confused, because they're both looking at them like Sid suddenly grown two horns and a tail. Or maybe just one overly affectionate Russian hockey player, Sid thinks. It takes a while before Malkin lets him go, and he's blushing when he does. Sid's hand is still awkwardly outstretched, and Malkin takes it, and gives him a professional handshake, as if they weren't just completely entangled in one another. The translator takes the opportunity to jump in, and Mario and Gonch visibly shake themselves before continuing on with the dinner. Gonch eyes Sid suspiciously as they settle down for steak and lobster. And Mario seems confused, but happy about their sudden bond between his two newest stars. Sid just tries to eat his dinner and ignore the way Malkin keeps staring at him, his eyes eerily focused and alive in where they haven't been for the last year. She had not pulled a double rose. A rose, but only two. Malkin doesn't speak much during dinner. He sometimes turns to Gonch for a spat of rapid-fire Russian, and he's unfailingly polite and complimentary towards Mario through the translator. But other than that, he stays silent and listens, as people interpret Mario's polite small talk. Sid isn't sure whether Malkin is just generally quiet, or if the language barrier gets in the way, but he figures it's not important. He's only at the dinner because he lives at Mario's, so he stays silent, eats his meal, and tries to project welcome in a way that doesn't draw him into any conversations. Sid thinks he's successful until he excuses himself after the plates have been cleared. There's an early skate tomorrow, and he's been thoroughly useless throughout the evening anyway. As much as he enjoys listening to Mario's stories and seeing all the hockey history casually scattered around his house, Sid feels a bit awkward around Malkin. The discomfort is enough to drive him back to the guest house. And he's halfway there when he hears a voice shouting, "Sid!" And he stops automatically. "Sid!" The voice exhales again, amazed, and Sid already knows who it is before he turns around. Malkin doesn't look tired or displaced anymore. His eyes are lit up, excited and anxious, and oddly hopeful. Sid takes a step toward him without thinking about it. He stops himself before he takes another one. "Are you looking for the restroom?" he asks, trying to think of reasons why Malkin could be running after him.
"I was looking for you,"
Malkin says, and Sid starts because that was perfect English.
"You speak English?"
he almost shouts, barely remembering to keep his voice down because he's so surprised. Malkin shakes his head roughly in frustration.
"No, I speak you."
That doesn't make any sense. So maybe Malkin really doesn't speak any English.
"You're the only one who can understand me,"
he says, his eyes widening in a way that highlights how sallow his skin is, how hollow his cheekbones. "But there's a translator," Sid starts to say, already knowing it's the wrong thing, before he opens his mouth. Malkin shakes his head again. He stands there and thinks furiously for a moment, his arms coming back up to wrap around his waist.
"You picked up something of mine,"
he says, trying a different approach. "Of yours?" Sid asks, head tilting to the side in confusion. He watches the way Malkin's eyes are drawn to his neck, and it makes him blush for a moment before he realizes.
"The chain? Is this yours?"
Sid's hand goes to his neck to draw out the chain and the cross. He's been wearing it the entire summer and never even noticed. Oddly enough, no one else has either. Sid furrows his eyebrows at that, watching the way the light seems to reflect oddly off of its surface. He was supposed to take it to the lost and found. He's not sure why he didn't. "Do you want it back?" he asks, moving to take it off.
"No!"
Malkin yells, but it's too late. Sid pulls and finds resistance. He gapes at the chain. "Can't get it off," Sid mutters, frowning. "Why won't it come off?" It's big for his head. He should be able to slip it right off, but it's not going. Sid turns it around and tries for the clasp, but there is none that he can see. He glares at Malkin.
"It's a contract,"
Malkin explains, but doesn't.
"It's my only chance."
"Chance at what?" Sid shouts.
"Freedom,"
Malkin whispers, and he sounds so despairing that Sid bites his lip against any of the many questions he wants to ask. There are other things that have to be handled first, and Sid tries to remind himself of that, instead of the chain around his throat. Now that he's remembering it's there, it sits heavy against his skin. The metal feels oddly slick. And Sid's mind is full of odd images of it coming to life and writhing up to tighten around his neck. Another thing to choke him, he thinks. And just as he was getting rid of that fucking cloud. "Mario is waiting for you," he reminds Malkin. Malkin nods but doesn't move.
I have skate tomorrow,"
he pleads, because he knows what Malkin is waiting for.
Who
he's waiting for.
"I can't go anywhere without you,"
Malkin explains, patient and apologetic. He looks terrible, standing there in the Lemieux's yellow lighting, and Sid finds himself walking closer again. They both jump when his hand settles on Malkin's side.
"Okay," Sid mumbles. "Let's go."
Mario is pleasantly surprised to see Sid return with Malkin. He cocks a questioning eyebrow at him that Sid has no real answer for, so he shrugs and stays quiet throughout the tour. Malkin looks a little more animated now, nodding at things the translator says and asking a few questions back. He wants to know all about this game or that play from years ago,
and Mario laughed his enthusiasm, and Sid can't help but be drawn in too. The whole tour reminds Sid that Malkin is a hockey player too, a hockey fan just like he is. It makes Sid smile and wonder what last year would have been like with Malkin by his side. The thought of what this year will be like makes his breath catch in his throat. The night is going well enough that Sid starts wishing for it not to end. He's not sure how to feel when that's exactly what happens. "Well, I should take Jenya home," Gonch says, and Sid tries to repeat the nickname, but he stops when Gonch smiles wryly at him. "Maybe you should come up with one of your own." "My Russian is not that bad," Sid snaps. That's a lie, because he basically has no Russian of which to speak. "We should probably give him a nickname anyway," Mario interjects. They all turn to look at Sid pointedly. "Why me?" he whines. "It seems fitting," Gonch drawls, both amused and suspicious. Sid blushes, glancing away. He makes eye contact with Malkin, who stares at him. He looks like he's waiting for something, and Sid bites his lower lip and thinks. Naming someone is a big deal, he feels. But he can't really say why he believes that. Giving people nicknames happens all the time in hockey. So he shrugs and says, "Gino, maybe?" Malkin beams at him. "Gino sounds good," Gonch agrees. "Well, time to take Gino home with me then." Malkin's smile turns into a frown. He says something in Russian that draws Gonch's eyebrows up to his hairline. Sid frowns when both Gonch and the translator turn to give him an odd look. "You volunteered to let him stay with you?" "No, I didn't," Sid yelps, turning to gape at Malkin. "Gino, why would I do that?" "I can't go anywhere without you," Gino repeats. And Sid can see his lips forming incomprehensible Russian, but he hears the English clearly in his head. "Please let me stay." Mario frowns at Gonch, and Sid watches as they whisper to each other, translations and speculations. "What'll happen if I don't?" he asks, more daring than he feels. Gino's shoulders droop, and his arms go back around his waist. Sid watches the exact moment his eyes go vacant again, when the warm, deep brown of them seems to fade out, something flat and dense. Suddenly Gino looks like he's completely absent from the room, despite the way his body takes up space, and Sid shivers, and reaches out before he even thinks about it. When his hand makes contact with Gino's arm, he feels a shock run up his own. And when Sid looks up again, Gino is back. His eyes look sad, resigned, and he whispers, That happens. Sid licks at his lips. "Okay, you can stay with me." Gonch and Mario's whispering halts instantly. "Are you sure, Sid?" Mario asks, looking between the two of them. "He'd be staying with you if I hadn't moved out." Sid tries to make a joke of it, and they laugh loyally, their foreheads still creased with worry. Gino doesn't laugh. He just stands there and stares until Sid shakes him, and then they both say their goodnights. They watch Gonch go, and then they leave, with Mario and Natalie watching them. Sid takes uneasy steps toward the guest house, and realizes with a start that he's still holding on to Gino. He doesn't let Gino go, and Gino doesn't say anything. Just follows in his footsteps as he opens the door to the house. Sid gives him a short tour, but he's not sure Gino absorbs any of it. His eyes are locked on the chain around Sidney's neck, and his eyes follow every movement Sid makes. It unsettles him, and the threat of choking comes back. "Will you tell me how your chain got to Melon?" Sid asks as he prepares to sleep. He stops in the middle of brushing his teeth to run his fingers across Gino's cross. It lies against his chest, oddly warm against the skin near his heart, but cold where he balances it in his hand. "Melon was supposed to be mine," Gino says, watching him play with the charm. "I gave my soul away for it." Sidney frowns because Melon isn't Gino's. It's Pittsburgh's and it might be Mario's. Sometimes, when Sid dreams, it's his, although he knows better than to say it out loud. "We can share it," Gino says, his lips crooking up on one side. "That's what the chain means." He reaches out and rests his hand on Sid's neck. Sid shivers because Gino's hands are oddly cold. They raise goosebumps on his skin as Gino's fingers start to slide down his neck, grazing across his collarbone before finding the cross that rests just a little below his gold 87. Sid holds himself tense, and Shino's hands flattened across his chest. His long fingers reaching across Sid's heart. He's not sure what Gino wants to do, and he starts thinking this was all a mistake, that he should have forced Gino to leave. And then Gino walks forward and envelops him again, drapes himself across Sid's back so that his arms are hugging Sid. Sid remembers what Gino looks like when he holds himself, his long limbs looking skinnier than before, and he looks in the mirror and expects to see the same. Instead, with Sid in his arms, Gino looks oddly solid. He's not quite broad, and he still seems all skin and bones and fatigue. But Gino looks more bare, regardless.
Please let me stay.
Gino whispers again into the soft skin at the back of Sid's neck. He doesn't sound like he's just asking about the guest house this time. That night, when Gino burrows into the covers alongside him in bed, Sid doesn't bother to object. When we were from the hunting come, that from my horse I fell, the queen of fairies, she caught me, in yon green hill to dwell. Training camp starts, and Gino takes off flying. He's so good with the puck, and he smiles the entire time on the ice. The team warms to him despite his limited English, and he picks up enough words to chirp badly. The rest of the time he just taunts them with stick taps and hip checks. It makes a small crowd of loyal Pens fans smile, and Sid takes a deep breath, free of anybody's expectations but his own. He thinks this year could be great, and the excitement makes him dive to steal the puck right off of Gino's stick. Gino shoots him a grin before taking off after him, and they play keep away while everyone laughs. Even Gino living with him has been going well. Mario and Natalie still look confused at their arrangement, but Sid refrains from saying anything about the way Gino looks when he wakes up in the morning and realizes he finally made it to the NHL. About the nightmares Gino sometimes has that Sid can't wake him up from. And everyone eventually seemed to settle into having another person at the breakfast table. The kids love Gino anyway. He picks them up and swings them around, and he's always okay with being wrestled to the ground before the Mew pile up. They used to go 4-on-1 against Sid during street hockey games, and now they can go 5-on-1. If they're feeling particularly fond of Gino that day, or 4-on-2 when they want to feel triumphant. Gino watches PBS with them, doesn't mind looking like a fool in a tiara during tea parties, and he cooks better than Sid does. Mario and Natalie used to ask Sid to babysit the kids, but they always looked worried leaving him alone with four of them. Now they leave for their dates with smiles, saying, "It's so nice that Gino is here." "I can take care of the kids," Sid objects, for the sake of his own dignity. Natalie taps him on the cheek fondly and obliterates it by saying, "But who will take care of you?"
"You're actually taking care of me,"
Gino reassures him later when all of the kids have gone to sleep. He's wrapped around Sid so closely that it makes Sid blink and wonder if he'd ever let anyone else this near. If he'd have ever let Gino this close without whatever weird thing is going on with the chain.
"Thank you," he mumbles.
And it fills Sid with a warm feeling that he holds onto as he falls asleep. He tries his hardest to hold onto it the next day, when he wakes up on top of Gino, on the couch, with Mario staring at them both.
"Something I should know," Mario whispers at him.
Sid glances up to see that Gino's eyes are still closed. His breathing is still peaceful and even. "No," Sid says, even though it's probably the wrong answer. It's all going so well that Sid forgets about Gino's past, about the chain around his neck, about the inexplicable way he can understand Gino when he doesn't know any Russian, and Gino barely knows any English. And then Metallurg files its lawsuit. The person who shows up to deliver the papers stands inexplicably at the benches, and Sid sees the exact moment Gino notices him. His step falters and his eyes go blank again. Sid skates over and crashes into Gino, and that's when Gino finally comes back to himself.
"What's wrong?"
Sid asks, whispering, hoping no one is paying attention to them.
"She's making her move,"
Gino whispers back, nodding at the well-dressed suit. He just smiles grimly and waves back.
"Who?"
Sid asks, but Gino is taking off toward the benches, being waved over by Ray and Michelle. Sid hesitates,
about to turn away. And then he makes eye contact with Ray, who very pointedly stares before waving him over too. He skates over slower than usual, dread building up in his chest.
I'm the representative of Vishkin, the General Director of Metallurg, the suit says, unfailingly polite, except for the way his smile seems to show too much teeth. I'm here to formally deliver the papers of the lawsuit.
Shouldn't you be talking to Brisson and Barry? Ray asks. Sid is so grateful for how unruffled he looks.
They've already received their copy, and one of my fellow representatives is handling their inquiries now. The man replies, I'm here to deliver another copy written in slightly different terms to Malkin's keeper.
Ray frowns at the choice of words, but he holds his hand out anyway. The suit's smile grows impossibly wide as he holds up the stack of papers and turns and hands them to Sid. Everyone sucks in a shocked inhale, except for Gino, who just squares his jaw and looks resigned. The suit looks disgustingly pleased.
You're an alternate captain, are you not? He asks, looking at a spot on Sid's chest.
Sid doesn't have to look down to know that's where Gino's cross rests, hidden by his pads and under armour.
I am, he says, taking the papers warily. They feel awkward in his gloved hand.
You don't have to sign anything, the suit tells him. The contract has already been taken up.
I thought this was a lawsuit.
Ray is quick to interject, but the suit ignores him.
Good luck, he says. Every continent shaped into a threat.
And Sid scowls at him as the suit turns on his heel and walks out. He does not say another word to Ray, who no longer looks unshaken but furious. Nor did he once look at Gino.
What's going on?
Ray hisses, grabbing for the papers. He flips through them and frowns.
What does he mean by a contract? This isn't...
He takes the papers back and wonders what exactly Gino has dragged him into, because where Ray saw a lawsuit over contract violation, Sid sees a challenge.
Try and take him.
At the end of every 7 years, we pay a tithe to hell. I am so fair and firm of flesh, I'm feared it be myself.
Sid successfully keeps his silence till they're back in the guest house. He grabs a bottle of Gatorade and drinks half of it, while Gino drops onto the couch as if all of his drinks have been cut. Sid thinks to check his eyes, but no, he's still in there. Sad and tired and hopeless, but still in there.
What did you do? He asks,
trying to keep his voice from rising.
It was my dream to play in the NHL.
Gino croaks out, his voice cracking at the end.
I just wanted to play here. I used to cry myself to sleep about it.
And Sid's heart can't help but ache for him, because he understands that feeling. He knows what it's like to lie in bed and dream of those crowds and that ice.
But what did you do?
He insists anyway, because he still dreams of playing even though he's been here for a year. Sid can't have that taken away from him. Not by anything. Not even Gino.
I made a deal with the Fairy Queen, Gino admits.
And Sid would laugh, but he sounds so serious.
She promised me I'd make it to Pittsburgh. That I'd get to play.
You signed a contract, Sid realizes with a start. Gino nods.
My soul for a chance, he says.
Like that's a decision anyone would make.
I'm trying to get out of it.
Sid lets out a startled laugh because, yes, all of Gino's drama is about getting out of contracts. He freezes for a moment and wonders if it's insensitive to find that funny. But Gino is smiling back at him when he looks.
Do you think you can do it? With your help. Yes, he replies,
his eyes dropping down to Sid's chest. The cross is still hidden under his shirt. Sid pulls it out and looks at it, thinks about trying to take it off again.
Do I have a choice? He asks. As soon as you hear what you have to do, Gino replies.
Sid tears his eyes away from the cross to look at him, eyebrows raised, waiting.
Don't let me go, he says.
I'll decide that once you tell me what I have to do, Sid objects. But Gino is shaking his head.
No, that is what you have to do, he explains.
His eyes slant down toward the ground, and they take his head with it. Gino watches the bent curve of Gino's back as he collapses forward. His ears barely catch the plea.
don't let me go. I'll try not to, Sid says, fighting against the desire to just promise. He drops his hold on the chain and watches Juno's eyes follow its descent until it comes to a stop on his chest. Why pullest thou the rose, Janet? Among the grooves so green, and all to kill the bonny babe that we got us between. Don't let me go, Juno had said, and Sid had promised to try. But it gets harder and harder to do. The media catches wind of the meeting, and someone provides them with the suit's quote. Everyone already knows that Juno is staying with Mario, sleeping under the same roof as Sid, and even if they don't have definite proof that they're sharing a bed together, the media doesn't need it. Stories get run and rumours start flying. Sid is used to the Sid the Kid name, and all the accusations of him diving. He's fine with getting called a crybaby, and he's used to the stupid Cindy Crisby taunts. They're not true. His implied relationship with Juno isn't either, but it cuts a little close by Sid's liking. If someone actually tries to pick this fight with him, Sid isn't sure how to deny it. It forms a bond between him and Juno, except this one isn't invisible. It's public, and it's growing in a way where Juno's critics become his. And instead of Juno helping him shoulder the anticipation, Sid just feels it twice as heavy on his back. There's so much at risk this way, that Sid feels himself cracking a little. He's always dreamed of playing in the NHL, and he knows there are things that could take him off the ice. Sid can't jeopardize that, not this year. Mario is gone. They don't have a captain, and Sid wears the A. The spotlight on him solidifies into cameras and microphones plentiful enough to crowd the team out after every practice. And with each question the reporters ask about Mario, about Juno, about his living situation, the more it feels like the cloud of expectations is coming back to choke him. This time, it has help. Sid plays with the cross when no one is looking, and hopes desperately that the media never notices him wearing it. He can't have them asking about that too. It already hangs a little too heavily around his neck. He holds on through the media speculation until Juno signs his contract, which Sid is careful not to attend. Juno looks shaken when he sees him again, though, and that night, Sid lies awake while Juno wraps himself around Sid's back, always to Sid's back, as if he's unsure if Sid can stand to look at him, mumbles, "Please don't let me go," until he falls asleep. Sid thinks about that night, when he finally gives up, the morning of September 18th. Juno isn't playing in their first preseason game, and Sid hopes that gives him some time to get used to it. He takes off the chain in the early morning light while Juno's eyes are still closed. But the second the metal no longer touches his neck, Juno is wide awake and sitting up. His eyes are glued to the necklace pulled in Sid's hand, and Sid frowns when he realizes Juno doesn't look surprised. Maybe he's been too obvious, he thinks, before saying, "I'm sorry, I have the penguins to carry. I can't carry you too." He fought the media speculation for so long, the constant linking of him to this rival and that girlfriend and this teammate. Sid wants a break, to just focus on hockey again. He wants only one thing, trying to bury him at a time. Juno says something in Russian, and Sid realizes with a start that he can no longer understand him. His confusion must come across because Juno stops himself, smiles wryly, and leans forward to grab the chain. Sid dangles it out to him, but jumps when he notices that Juno isn't reaching for the cross. His lips graze Sid's cheek like an accident, but judging from the rueful look on Juno's face when he pulls away, it wasn't just a mistake. Sid opens his mouth to try and say something, maybe to apologize again. He catches himself in time, though, realizing that Juno won't be able to understand him, and he closes his mouth again. When Juno gets out of bed and goes to call Gonch, Sid doesn't try to stop him. Instead, he wastes the rest of his day in Mario's house while Juno moves out, and he doesn't look back when he catches Mario staring at him. I would not give my one true love
for any lord that ye have. Gino dislocates his shoulder in his first NHL game. It's only the preseason, so Sid shouldn't worry. But he saw the way Gino's eyes had gone vacant before the collision, and he can't help but feel guilty anyway. The media has already caught on to Gino moving into Gonja's house, and they ask him about it over and over again in the post-game scrum. Did you argue? The reporters ask. Did you kick him out? Sid refuses to answer, pulls his cap low over his eyes, and recites cliches till they give up and pull away. After the game, Sid goes to visit Gino at Gonja's house and finds him sitting alone in the dark, his arm in a sling, and his eyes blind to the world. He's wearing the chain himself, the cross hanging out from his shirt. It looks like it's lost its luster. Gino, he mumbles, remembering how awkward he had felt giving Gino his name, the nickname that caught on, and now it's the only thing he hears in America. Gino, come back. He wonders what fairyland must be like, if that's where Gino's soul goes when his eyes go flat and dull. Sid reaches out to grab the cross, and he hesitates for a moment before pulling it off of Gino's head. When he settles it around his neck again, it feels heavier than before, but less like a burden, and more like it's settled. Sid looks down to see Gino back, eyes focused and trained on his.
You don't have to do this, he says,
guilt and relief fighting in his voice. I want to be the best, Sid tells him, holding his stare. That means I can carry the team, and you, he elaborates.
That means I'll put up with anything to keep you both, Sid thinks.
Gino smiles like he hears it, like he understands Sid perfectly.
We'll get to the playoffs this year,
Gino promises, like he thinks he has to fight to make a case for himself. Sid just waves him off and grabs Gino's still packed duffel bag from the floor. I have to get dinner, Sid declares. He doesn't have to say, follow me, because Gino doesn't have a choice. He seems happy about that, though, smiling as he shadows Sid out of the house. This time, when Gino moves back in with him, the media doesn't catch on to it. Sid doesn't have to deal with any other questions about him and Gino. Mario doesn't even ask about it. He just smiles when he sees them together and talks about how great he thinks their chances are.
But hold me fast and fear me not. I'll do you no harm.
Their chances are great. They get fifth seed instead of fighting for seventh or eighth. And as their wins rack up through January and February and March, Sid doesn't have to ask Gino if it was worth it. He can tell by the way he shouts after each goal and throws himself into the sound barrier of the crowds cheering that it is. It motivates Sid to go even farther, to win a playoff series for the first time since 2001. He's hopeful and excited before game one, on top of the world and thinking he's ready. Gino stops him before they leave, and Sid thinks it's for a hug or a chirp. Instead, Gino whispers,
please don't let me go,
and holds out the contract that Sid received from the suit that day. The words have shifted, changed. Sid stares at it uncomprehendingly.
If you want to take him, lose.
They do lose. It's not on purpose. Sid skates around, and Gino gets an assist. He skates around and feels dizzy with a choice that really isn't one he can make. At the end of the game, with less than a minute left, Sid scores his own goal, but it's too late. The Senators take the game 6-3, and Sid skates around and tries not to feel defeated by a collar he chose to wear.
You can take it off, Gino tells him, eyes wide and earnest.
His hurt has always been a little too soft, Sid notices, watching the way Gino worries about him instead of his own soul.
You can win this series.
Sid knows he should win this series. For all of the guys, Reggie and Gonchar and brand new Jordan Stahl, for Mario, for the fans. He takes that thought onto the ice with him for game two. And Gino must do the same because they combine for 4 points. Gino even assists him on his goal, the game-winning goal of the night, and Sid wonders if it hurt to do so. But Gino is grinning at him during the goal celebration, shouting in Sid's face like he always does. And Gino's heart has always been a little too soft, Sid reminds himself.
They don't give up in Game 3. But Sid has reached a decision, and he doesn't despair over the loss. Neither he nor Gina put up any points in Game 4 or 5, and it's as if everyone else catches on and gives up too. Sid feels the cross against his skin heat up as time ticks down to their loss. But when the end buzzer sounds and Sid fishes it out from under his jersey, the cross seems cold and new again. He presses it tightly into his palm until it heats up like normal metal. And he watches the way the light reflects plainly off of its surface as he slips it back under his clothes. He tries to focus on that ordinary chunk of metal as he listens to the media's accusations. The comeback team has let everyone down, he hears them say. Yevgeny Malkin, the bright prospect from Russia, barely showed up. Sidney Crosby has failed Pittsburgh once again. He lets it all wash over him, and he doesn't smile during the press scrum after Game 5. Just because he chose this doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. And then I'll be your own true love. I'll turn a naked knight. Then cover me with your green mantle and hide me out of sight. Afterward, however, in the darkness of the room he shares with Gino, Sid lets himself grin. This is the reward he gets for his choice, he thinks, throwing the covers up above their heads. Sid may not have won a playoff series, but he won this. So they'll hide from the media, from Metalurg and expectations and fairy queens. They'll wait until everything is quiet again before they surface. Until then, Sid presses kisses into Gino's skin and lets the cross hang in the narrow space between their bodies. It's lost all of its power now and warms between them, susceptible to the heat of their proximity. All of Gino's Russian has become incomprehensible again, but Sid doesn't need that to understand him. They don't need to talk to hide together. She that has gotten young Tamlin has gotten a stately groom. They win the Stanley Cup together in 2009. Sid watches the cup pass to Gino, and they smile when their eyes meet. He breathes in air, clean of anything but their accomplishment. The end. Thank you for listening.
She's come to the roses growing wild. She's pulled a single one when a wild young man appears and cries, oh, lady, let alone.
How dare you pull my roses out? How dare you break my tree? How dare you run in these green woods without asking leave of me?
Says Janet, bear this wood's my own. My father gave it me. And I can pluck myself a rose without asking leave of thee. Bold as brass, he takes her hand. Color rises to her skin. She looks the